Good morning. I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Monday morning, February 18. It's All Things Political. Wonderful guest this hour. Ron Elving is joining us, senior Washington editor for NPR. We do want to remind you it is our kind of spring, end of winter pledge drive, and we will have a goal this hour of 40 callers. This is a regularly scheduled program where we talk about politics with terrific guests, and we ask that you contribute. We'll have a goal, I said, of 40 donors this hour, and our pledge phone number to keep in mind, 888-202-2552. And a call, actually, 888-202-2552. Ron Elving is the NPR News senior Washington editor. He directs coverage of the nation's capital and national politics. You can hear him on Talk of the Nation. He has won many awards, including the coveted Edward R. Murrow Award. And he also worked for a time here in our state. He was the Capitol Bureau Chief for Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, and also served as a reporter in this city of Milwaukee, and we're delighted to have Ron with us. We have so much to talk about: immigration and guns and Chuck Hagel and meteors and the state of the economy, Elizabeth Warren, a big rally in Washington over the weekend. We'll be welcoming phone calls, as we always do. Our phone number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655, and we would love to hear from you during the course of the hour. We also have a Facebook page, The Kathleen Dunn Show, and would love to have you leave us your comments on whatever we happen to be discussing on that page. Hello, Ron Elving.
Hello, Kathleen. How are you?
Hi, I'm fine. How are you? Thanks for being with us.
My pleasure to be with you. It's always fun to talk to people in Wisconsin.
I know. You were here, and we're glad you're talking to us. Let's start with something that's unlikely, because I wonder if there will be bills introduced this week, or there already have been, to give us some kind of defense plan for meteors. That story was amazing, wasn't it?
It certainly was. I mean, the coincidence of the meteor falling at the same time that there was a large asteroid passing relatively close to Earth. I guess the closest Passover point was Indonesia. And even though it's, you know, thousands of miles away, it's close by space standards. And, of course, on some return path, centuries or whenever from now, that same asteroid could theoretically be a little bit closer still, as other asteroids could be, as we saw with this meteor shower and meteor that came to Earth last week on the same day.
So are people in Washington talking about some kind of plan to knock these out before they hit us?
I think it has to do with Bruce Willis and Clint Eastwood and other heroes who get blasted into space and
intercept
the space rock and blow it up with a nuclear weapon. We don't really know anything about how we would begin to do this when, after all, not the big rock that went by, that was very closely monitored and very closely tracked, and they knew it precise down to the seconds when it would pass close to Earth. This other smaller bit of space debris that actually did come to Earth and did survive in some measure the atmosphere, I think we should all be grateful that as little of it actually finally busted through the ice of that lake as did. But that particular piece of debris, obviously, we did not know was coming, and so that would be extremely difficult to defend against.
Yeah, it was quite a story. There was a big demonstration in Washington over the weekend, a large climate and anti-Keystone XL oil sands pipeline rally over the weekend. How are we progressing on this huge issue of climate change, and tell me about the protest.
The protest was a big one, even by Washington standards, not hundreds of thousands of people, but certainly tens of thousands of people, various estimates. I believe the organizers were saying 30,000-35,000 people. Talked to some people who were in the rally last night, and they were saying something closer to 50,000. It was a good-sized group of people, particularly when you consider the Wisconsin-like weather that we were experiencing yesterday. We were down in the 20s. It was very high, blustery winds. As windy as it ever gets here, really, and being out exposed on the mall, as these people were, between the Washington Monument and the White House, they were getting tested, let us put it that way, as far as the strength of their political convictions. It was also a very well-behaved group of people, and they listened to a lot of different speakers, talking not only about the Keystone Pipeline, which is, of course, the big issue of the moment for many of them, and some of the protesters came early last week to be arrested out in front of the White House on this issue. they were also talking about the larger questions of climate change and all this gathering evidence that we have of climate change, and pressuring the president to do more, both in terms of proposing legislation to Congress and pressuring Congress, and also in terms of ordering things and doing things that he can do on his own. For instance, the Keystone Pipeline, which if he says no, doesn't happen.
And he did say no a while ago, at least for a while, until there were more studies on this, right?
Yes, they kicked the can, as we do so well here in Washington. The State Department was ready to go with this. And, of course, it's really a Canadian project. It's really largely about the priorities for developing oil in the tar sands region of Alberta and Western Canada, which is the home territory of Stephen Harper, who is the prime minister in Canada. And it's a little bit like, if you want to put it in American terms, it's a little bit like having a Texan president. A little bit like having George W. Bush in the White House. This is a very pro-energy development administration that they have in Ottawa these days. And as a result, they have really staked a great deal on developing these tar sands and getting billions of dollars of investment out of that. And getting it to market involves getting it to port so that it can be used in the United States or used elsewhere, overseas, as much of it would be. And that means getting it to refineries in some kind of economic way. And the cheapest way to do that, apparently, is to run a pipeline all the way from Alberta down to Houston, Texas, refine it there, and either ship it away or then distribute it to the United States, which is the biggest buyer of Canadian oil and Canadian energy in general. So it's a big, big deal to the Canadians. It's not as big a deal to most Americans yet, but it is a big deal to the people whose territory would be traversed by that pipeline, which would have to go from the U.S.-Canada line almost to the Gulf, well, all the way, really, to the Gulf of Mexico to be refined. That means an awful lot of tar sands oil, which is just about the dirtiest kind of oil there is, going through pipelines across much of America. They did vary the route. The original thing the president said was, don't take it right over Nebraska and the Ogallala Aquifer out there.
Mm-hmm.
But then they adjusted the route a little bit, and the governor of Nebraska got okay with it. And on the basis of that, the decision comes back to the State Department whether or not to recommend this treaty with Canada. So John Kerry, this will be the first big decision he recommends to the president, and we'll see if he continues the State Department approval or whether he reverses that decision. And if he does reverse it, then I would think the president would go with John Kerry. If, on the other hand, Kerry says, let's go with the pipeline, the president might go the other way and say, no, I think considering the importance of climate change as an issue to this administration, we can't sign on to a project that has this many problems.
Mm-hmm. Elizabeth Warren made a big splash taking on the banks. Does too big to fail mean too big for trial? She kept asking. There are some sources, mostly progressive sources, saying this woman is really terrific and she ought to be the presidential candidate in 2016. What did you think of her performance?
I thought it was... Well, she knows an awful lot about this subject.
Yes, she does.
She was the president's choice to be the regulator of the banks with this new consumer protection, financial protection agency the president created last year. And, of course, it was her presence as its first administrator, the prospect of that, that made the Republicans really push back on this issue and try to keep the agency from even happening and then to keep her from being the person who would be actually running it, which they were ultimately successful in doing. But then, of course, that backfired on the Republicans in Massachusetts because then she ran for the Senate against Scott Brown. And to a lot of people's surprise, she beat him and beat him pretty soundly in the end back in November. So that's how she got to the Senate. Everyone's been wondering, is she going to be an Al Franken kind of senator? And the reason I make that comparison is when Al Franken came to town, people wondered, will he be the Al Franken we know from Saturday Night Live?
Right.
Or will he be somebody else? Well, he was somebody quite different, and he has been extraordinarily low profile, except, of course, in Minnesota, where he goes home a lot and he works real hard to look like a good Minnesota fellow who's doing stuff for the home state. And people wondered if Elizabeth Warren would follow that model or whether she would follow a much higher profile model, suggesting that she really wanted to be paid attention to early on and maybe put on that short list of possibilities for a national ticket down the road. And I think we've seen it's more or less the latter model. She's looked a little bit like the Liberals' version of Ted Cruz. Now, there's a comparison probably will not be appreciated by you.
Exactly. Well, it is interesting that every now and then you get somebody who brings up an issue that really is fairly important that isn't discussed. She asks a legitimate question. We all taxpayers gave a lot of money to big banks, and that money was not used appropriately in many cases. Are you too big to go to trial? It's a legitimate question, really.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. Is there anyone who is just too big and too important to the economy to be above prosecution, above the law, in essence? And she has, throughout her career, stood for a negative answer to that question. That has been the essence of her political appeal, was that she was the person willing to go out and say, we don't need to accept this. We don't need to accept that there are banks too big to fail or that there are bankers too big to prosecute.
Mm-hmm.
But if you look back over the last 4 years, and you look at the history of where we were in 2007, 2008, particularly in the fall of 2008, and the tremendous disruption that happened, and beyond that, the much greater disruption that was prospective at that point, essentially the collapse of the credit and banking industries of the Western world, that was a real prospect for a period of time. And an enormous amount of money was paid out by the Federal Treasury to forestall that prospect. And in the long run, it appears that most of that money is coming back, and in some cases, some individual cases, it's actually going to show a little bit of profit, as was the case with the auto bailout. So the bank bailout, in that sense, that it prevented a worldwide collapse and global depression, was a success. And in the sense that it's actually bringing the money back so that the taxpayer in the long run will probably be made whole, that is also clearly a success of policy. But where on the third leg of this stool you have failure is no one has really been held responsible, or at least very, very few individuals have.
Ron Elving is our guest this hour. He is senior Washington editor for NPR, and we're delighted to have him with us, and he's delighted to speak to a Wisconsin audience because he spent quite a bit of time reporting for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel from this fine state of Wisconsin. We have much yet to discuss. The president was in Chicago speaking on jobs and gun violence, and also this plan. I want to talk to Ron more about this, a $1 billion investment to build a new national network for manufacturing innovation to spur high-tech manufacturing in America. We'll talk about that, immigration reform, a higher minimum wage. When will Chuck Hagel be confirmed? Some of the questions that are still on the table. And please, we'll welcome your phone calls. If you'd like to call in now, that would be great. 800-486-8655. We always talk about the week's top news stories every Monday on our All Things Political segment. And we're just tickled to have Ron with us. We'll be back to the conversation just momentarily, but we need to take just a few minutes to ask for your support of the programs that you enjoy. You must know that listeners help pay the bills at Wisconsin Public Radio. We are in our winter, almost spring, membership drive, and Lisa Nalbandian is with me. We're asking you to go to WPR.org or call 888-202-2552 at this very moment to make a gift in support of all of these programs that you count on.
Last hour, our goal was 75 pledges, and we heard from 41 listeners. Thank you for those pledges. Our goal this hour is to get to 40 pledges. Help us meet this goal by making a contribution now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. The programs you enjoy will be here every day on Wisconsin Public Radio, thanks to your gift.
As you know, we get terrific guests on Wisconsin Public Radio, and kudos to Rhonda Fanning for this program. She gets fabulous people for us. And our guests know that you'll ask great questions. There won't be interruption by commercials, and that's a big thing. Your support, of course, makes this possible because you really are the most reliable part of our budget. Thanks in advance for making your pledge, WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Rather than receiving a book or DVD as a thank you gift, you can do something different this drive. Give $10 a month or more and select Food for 40 as your thank you gift. We'll pass on what we would normally spend on a book or DVD to a Wisconsin food bank in your area. Your gift of $10 a month or more will be enough to feed 40 people.
That's wonderful.
People. It's really something.
Mm-hmm.
So pledge right now, WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Those of us who have been in this business a long time know that radio is the perfect companion because it complements anything else you're doing. If you want to sit on the couch and just listen, you can.
But you don't have to. Think about all the things you do while listening to the radio. You can drive while listening to the radio. Get ready for work while listening to the radio. Clean the house. Go for a run. Whatever.
Clean the house, huh?
I hadn't thought about that.
There's an idea. Maybe I will do that at some point. Radio is terrific. It doesn't drain your energy. It adds to your energy and all the conversations you have because of what you hear here. It adds and enriches anything else you're doing. And Wisconsin Public Radio does all of that, and it is listener-supported. So you're important. Your contribution at WPR.org or 888-202-2552 keeps it all going.
You're part of Wisconsin Public Radio's community of listeners, and maybe you have been for a long time. And now you can be part of our community of members, people who loyally support the programs they value.
Your contribution of any amount makes you a member. You make a pledge, your aunt makes a pledge, your cousin makes a pledge, your neighbor makes a pledge, and all of those pledges added together make WPR happen. It starts, though, with you right now, WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
It's fundraising time. Maybe we've worn you down. Well, if you finally decided to give, but still undecided about how much to give, I'm Scott Simon from NPR News. We have a suggestion. Why don't you think about becoming a sustaining giver? Just $10 a month. It's billed to your credit card. It renews automatically. But you can stop anytime you want. We hope you won't. Then no matter when you tune into your station, you know that you're doing your part. So join as a sustaining supporter of your station today. Just $10 a month. Here's how.
Pledge at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. I'm Kathleen Dunn with Lisa Nalbandian asking for your support of Wisconsin Public Radio. Your gift may be $5 a month or $10 or $100. Whatever amount you choose is the right amount at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Giving to WPR is easy. All it takes is a few minutes of your time and a gift of any amount, say $10 a month.
Yes, that's a good idea. $10 a month, a donation really will come back to you every day in the form of great programs. Make your contribution at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Here are some questions to think about when deciding to donate to Wisconsin Public Radio. What's WPR worth to you? How much do you listen over the course of a week, a month, a year? How much do you pay a month for things like cable or movies?
At WPR, you get to choose how much you give. Any contribution makes you a member. Please pledge now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. Thank you, Lisa. And you're listening to All Things Political here on the Ideas Network. Ron Elving is our guest today, senior Washington editor for NPR. We'll go to phone calls. Our number, if you'd like to join this conversation, we have so much to discuss this hour, 800-486-8655. And Ron, we go to Michael from Milwaukee. Hi, Michael.
Good morning. Yesterday I was watching Meet the Press, and they had John McCain on, and he was going on and on about this Benghazi thing. I'm so sick and tired of hearing about Benghazi. Everybody realizes this is just a big smokescreen, much to do about nothing, that they just want to keep out there, to keep things muddled up and keep things messy. I'm old enough, I remember back in 1968, I was in Vietnam during the Tet Offensive, and our embassy was overrun and captured by the enemy. We had over 500,000 people in country at the time. How much security on the ground does John McCain need in order to secure our embassies?
Well, of course, what happened in Benghazi was not even an embassy. That was a mission. That's not the capital of Libya. They, of course, do not defend every piece of property or piece of real estate that might be devoted to the United States mission in a country the way they would defend the embassy itself. Had this happened at the embassy in Tripoli, this probably would not have happened. And certainly our ambassador, Chris Stevens, would not have been as vulnerable had he been back there in the embassy. But he was the kind of guy, and he'd been in country a long time, he was the kind of guy who did not like to be behind a fortress wall all the time. He wanted to be out meeting with Libyans, being with Libyans, getting involved in what was going on. Now, this day, September 11th, 2011, obviously an anniversary, 2012, not the 10th anniversary of 9/11, but rather the September of just last fall. On this particular day, there were protests all over the Arab world having to do with an American video, having to do with anti-Americanism in general, some people in support of terrorism, if you will, of anti-Americanism, on that particular anniversary. And it was a dangerous day for him to have been traveling, and there should have been more security around him, but he was, generally speaking, a low-security kind of guy. This all went terribly badly, but what Republicans have been most upset about, and the reason they keep bringing this back up, is because in the wake of the tragedy, in the later days of September and into October, the president and the people around him gave shifting accounts of what happened and talked a lot about these video protests and not so much about an organized al-Qaeda terrorist attack, which we now know was what killed Ambassador Stevens on September 11, 2012. And they were clearly holding the whole thing off so as not to make it a huge political bruise for the president going into the election day. And this annoyed the Republicans greatly. Mitt Romney tried to make hay of it in the debates, had a little bit of trouble really making the charge stick. And as a result, in the end, Benghazi, all the polls tell us, was not on the minds of very many swing voters when we got to November. Obviously, a lot of Republicans were concerned about it in November, and a lot of Mitt Romney's voters were upset about it, and this remains a kind of open wound for many Republicans. Certainly, that's true here in Washington. Many people in Congress continue to demand more explanations. Just in the case of the Hagel matter, even though, of course, Chuck Hagel had nothing to do with any of it, and in any event, this was a State Department failure to protect these people. It was not a matter of the Department of Defense, but there's been a great deal of a fishing expedition, if you will, to try to find some way to connect defense to it, to connect DOD to it, to connect Chuck Hagel to it, and then to hold Hagel hostage to some degree to get more information from the White House. So finally, the White House last week put out a letter saying, no, the president did not call the president of Libya on the night of the attack in September of 2012. That, of course, had already been reported in the State Department's investigation of what happened. But the White House put out a letter acknowledging that President Obama, while he did talk to other people, he did not talk to the president of Libya on that night. This seems to have made some degree of difference. At least it's been acknowledged that the president acknowledged this. And as you also probably picked up from those talk shows yesterday morning, both John McCain and Lindsey Graham, who have been kingpins in the Hagel resistance, have said they will allow a vote. They will no longer be filibustering the Hagel nomination. So barring the unforeseen, barring some new revelation, I would guess that a week from today, a week from tomorrow, the Senate will come back and proceed to a vote on Chuck Hagel and confirm his nomination rather easily, probably with something well into the 60s of positive votes.
There have also been suggestions, Ron, that the reason for holding up this nomination is that a lot of Republicans were upset about Chuck Hagel's thoughts concerning our policy in Iraq. Is there anything to that?
I believe there is. I believe that John McCain and Lindsey Graham, who at one time were not only politically close to Chuck Hagel, but quite close personal friends with Chuck Hagel, felt betrayed when Hagel, in the latter part of George W. Bush's presidency, really turned against the Iraq war, which he had originally supported. He turned against it and was quite vociferous about it and also did not support the surge, that was the David Petraeus effort in the latter part of the Bush years, to essentially save our bacon in Iraq and give us a better cover under which to withdraw. That was a strategy that John McCain personally supported quite strongly and on which he based much of his own 2008 presidential campaign. Chuck Hagel did not support that presidential campaign. He was neutral, even though he was a Republican in the Senate. and had been close friends with John McCain and pretty close to him politically. He did not support McCain's presidential campaign in 2008, and that is the kind of thing that is not easily forgotten.
Thanks, Michael, so much for your call. Matt in Shorewood is next. Hi, Matt.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I was calling in regard to the earlier conversation about the Keystone Pipeline, mm-hmm. and I believe Mr. Elvin had mentioned that it, like the pipeline through the U.S. would be the cheapest method of getting it supported. I feel like I've read a number of times about Canada itself having denied a pipeline running through territories in Canada, and I didn't know if you could, to get some more information, if you could comment on that at all, if that is the case, or if you know more details concerning that.
I'm sorry, I'm having a little trouble hearing. I'm having a little trouble hearing that telephone call. I don't know if it's a cell phone or why.
Yeah, it was not a very... He talked...
Could you tell me what...
Yes, Ron. He talked about there being protests and concerns in Canada about this pipeline as well. Are you aware of those?
Yes, absolutely. In the same way that, as I was saying, is the same way that when we had a Texan in the White House who was obviously somebody well acquainted with the oil industry, had come from the oil industry, many people in the United States were opposed to his oil policies. In the same way, many people in Canada want to have no part of Stephen Harper's priorities with respect to energy as well. So it has been controversial in Canada, but at the moment, the Conservatives have control of the Canadian national government, and he is making the policy and pushing very hard to get Alberta to be an even greater center of energy. Now, of course, many people in Canada do not support him in that, even as many Americans did not support George W. Bush.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about guns for a moment. It still is very much in the news. The president spoke in Chicago, and there was yet another gun shooting of the sister of somebody who was in that audience. It's just relentless in that city. Where are we going to be on this? Also, Senator McCain said there seems to be broad support for universal background checks. Is that as far as we'll get? Will that pass Congress? Will there be more?
I wish I could say that this moment, which is clearly the most disturbed moment regarding gun violence that we've had in many years, even with all the other killings that there have been, the combination, the quick succession of the shootings there in Wisconsin, also, of course, Tucson, Aurora, Colorado, and now Newtown, and really Newtown above all, has moved, I think, the public in a way that nothing has in a number of years.
Mm-hmm.
So suddenly this issue is back front and center. However, the degree of difficulty in changing American laws about any given kind of American behavior cannot be higher than it is on guns. So I do believe background checks are coming. I do believe background checks will be made as universal as is humanly possible, and that is certainly a progress on that front. But as far as renewing the assault weapons ban that we had from 94 to 2004, or in some other way making a huge difference to the number of existing weapons that are out there in society, that's going to be a great deal more difficult.
Ron Elving is our guest this hour. And we're talking all things political. He is the senior Washington editor for NPR, and we're delighted to have him as our guest. He has done other work as well. He was a reporter and state capitol bureau chief for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel for some time as well, so he knows Wisconsin. We're welcoming phone calls for him. Please feel free to join our on-air conversation at 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. I'm Kathleen Dunn with Lisa Nalbandian in our Milwaukee studios, and this is also the Wisconsin Public Radio Winter Membership Drive. You rely on Wisconsin Public Radio and the Ideas Network for intelligent discussions, terrific guests, and more than ever, we rely on the money that you give to keep that talk on the air. So your gift today of any amount helps fund the important discussions that you count on. Please give now, WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
We're looking for 31 pledges in the next 25 minutes. Thank you if you've already given. And if you haven't, help us stay on track by making your contribution right now, WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
We take great care in bringing you 2 great hours of radio from 9 to 11, Monday through Thursday. Books and history, sports, politics, social issues, education, space, you name it. We're here for you with important topics and fun topics as well. But we can't do it without your support. Listener contributions make up nearly 40% of our budget. I repeat, 40%. And it's why we're asking for your gift right now. WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Make yourself feel extra good when you donate to WPR this pledge drive. Give $10 a month or more. And as your thank you gift, 40 meals will be provided to those in need through area food banks. Just choose Food for 40 as your thank you gift when you pledge at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
WPR has been around for a long time because we're committed to quality, and we can't keep that quality up without money. A lot of that money comes from you. Listener donations make up the single largest portion of our budget.
Your contribution makes this program possible, and so many others as well. Be part of the quality you hear every day on WPR. Make a donation at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
You listen to WPR all year. Now donate the same way that you listen, by becoming a sustaining member. You can make the decision once, and you'll make affordable contributions of, say, $10 or $20 a month for as long as you wish.
It's easy on your budget, and it cuts down on paperwork. And as a sustainer, you'll automatically be entered in all of our drawings and sweepstakes. Don't delay. Become a sustainer right now. WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
My name is Laura Jasper. I'm from Cameron, Wisconsin. I'm a member of the board of the Wisconsin Public Radio Association. I listen to Wisconsin Public Radio for ideas. For me, Wisconsin Public Radio is simply integrated with my daily life. I wake up to Wisconsin Public Radio. I listen to it in the car. Not a day goes by that I don't listen to Wisconsin Public Radio.
Go to WPR.org or 888-202-2552 to make your pledge of support. I'm Kathleen Dunn with Lisa Nalbandian, and we're asking you to really support the programs that you count on WPR, and we thank you in advance for your gift of $5 or $10 or $30 a month or whatever amount is right for you. Here's how you do it, WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
We are looking for 31 pledges. In the next 15 minutes, your pledge right now helps pay for the programs you count on all year long. Thank you if you've already given. If you haven't, give now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Maybe giving a dollar a day is the right amount for your Wisconsin Public Radio listening. When you think about it, a dollar a day is a great value.
Yeah, it comes out to about $30 a month, which you can set up as monthly transfers from your bank account or credit card installments.
Any way you do it will make it convenient for you. Make your pledge now, WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And this is a good tip, too. Your employer might match your donation, so you could really be doubling the value of your gift to WPR.
If you don't know whether your employer will match your gift, pledge now and ask your human resources department the next time you get a chance. Pledge your support to this program and to WPR at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Yeah, we have 30 more pledges to go during this 9 o'clock hour, so help out right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
If you're not a sustainer already, become one right now. It's easy to set up the ongoing monthly donations from your bank account or credit card, WPR.org or 888-202-2552. A sustaining membership is very convenient, and it also provides reliable funding for WPR.
When you give $120, that's $10 a month, you can get our Food for 40 thank you gift and provide 40 meals to those facing hunger in your area. It's a great way to do two good things at once. With your pledge at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Thank you, Lisa, very much. And thanks, everybody, for all of your pledges. Keep them rolling in, please. 30 pledges we need in the next 20 minutes. We can do that. 888-202-2552. Ron Elving is our guest. He is senior Washington editor for NPR, and it's our All Things Political segment, which you always hear on Mondays here on the Ideas Network. And let's go to Jim in Milwaukee. Hi, Jim.
Yeah, hi. Just a quick aside, Rachel Maddow is going to have an interesting show on MSNBC tonight at 8 o'clock about the lead-up to the Iraq War. But what I wanted to talk about today was regulation versus deregulation, the continuing story. We already know about the pollution, the threatened pollution of water from different sources of resource exploitation, but a couple new wrinkles came up this week. The latest issue of Mother Jones magazine talked about an inactive fault in Oklahoma that was activated into an earthquake through fracking. I thought that was interesting, and people might want to check that out. And finally, there also was the story, of course, of the Carnival Cruise situation. Carnival is regulated, or very poorly regulated, if regulated at all, out of the Bahamas. And so my sarcastic observation was that if people love deregulation, they'll love to book a cruise with Carnival in the near future.
Ron.
Yes, the Carnival story last week was one of those cable television staples that...
It sure was.
just keeps on giving. There is everything to be learned from the extraordinary lack of regulation that the entire cruise industry has. This is one of the least regulated industries that many Americans pour money into. And so, you know, this is an illustration of what can happen. Of course, Carnival also had that terrible accident off the coast of Italy last year. Whether or not this will finally wake people up and get people to require that somebody that is bringing so many of their customers from one country and yet is very lightly regulated by the source of all of their revenue, whether they should be allowed to get away with that.
I want to talk a little bit about the economy, Ron, before we go back to phone calls. The president called in his State of the Union address for this $1 billion investment to build a new national network for manufacturing innovation to spur high-tech manufacturing in America. How does he proceed on that? And what is the assessment of the economy right now? Are those big corporations that really are sitting on a whole lot of money starting to release some of it, which would help with employment in this country? Will they? Is the economy on the up tick here or not?
Well, let me start with your second question first. The economy is showing a lot of mixed signals right now, but the overall trend of the economy appears to be good. It appears to be strengthening. It appears to be rebuilding from 2008. Now, it really largely depends on which set of statistics you choose to look at and what your expectations might be. With respect to the housing industry, we see foreclosures are down. We see prices recovering, at least in some parts of the country. And we see some of the worst excesses of the last decade that led to the collapse being to some degree corrected, to some degree they have not been properly regulated. They have not been brought to a point where people can feel utterly assured that we won't have the kind of bubble that we had in the past. But it looks like we're a long way from the next bubble, let's put it that way, and at least some of the abuses that led to all that sorrow and grief appear to at least now be recognized as abuses and as things that need to be kept under check. That's one factor in the economy. As far as unemployment, obviously it's not coming down anywhere near as quickly as most people would want it to come down. It has ticked slightly back upward with a slowdown in the fourth quarter last year, and those are somewhat discouraging numbers. A lot of this is a result of the uncertainty of policy coming from Washington. We do have divided government. We have very different ideas on the part of the two parties about how to go forward on the economy. And to some degree, the recovery has proceeded despite those mixed signals in the last couple of years. And in the next couple of years, if the federal government can get its act together and if the two parties can work together to both reduce the deficit and encourage growth, obviously you can't put all of your eggs in either of those baskets simultaneously. They have to work out some kind of balance. But they may be, in a kind of halting and stumbling sort of way, getting there. if the federal government can give clearer signals that encourage growth while also addressing the long-term deficit, then I think one of the great barriers in terms of consumer confidence, which does go up and down in reaction to what they see coming from Washington, and also in terms of business investment, which clearly responds to the Fed and clearly responds to fiscal policy from Congress and the President, we'll see those strengthen and we'll see the economy grow in the next couple, 3 years. And I think the President and some of the plans that he's putting out is, to some degree, he's trying to encourage that, of course. He's maybe embroidering around it a little bit, and he's addressing specific things, such as the need for high-tech manufacturing to be in this country so we don't get outdone by some of the other countries that are investing in competitive high-tech manufacturing more than we are.
And what does he mean by high-tech manufacturing, Ron?
I think he is talking about the kinds of industries that manufacture not only electronic products and, you know, telecommunications, although it would include those things, but more of a high-tech approach to basic manufacturing. In other words, using computer-driven tools to manufacture car parts, to manufacture construction equipment parts, to manufacture all the kinds of heavy machinery and heavy equipment that Wisconsin, for example, has been famous for generations. All of that needs to move into another generation of intelligent design, another generation of floor factory management that is very largely computer-driven, and it requires higher level of skill on the part of the workers, certainly at the high end of the skill spectrum among the workers. And that is what the President is talking about. He wants to work with specific communities that are willing to bring together their businesses and their educational units, and obviously Milwaukee is another example of that, with all of the educational focus on engineering development that Milwaukee has had for a long, long time, and which has worked very closely with industry in Wisconsin for a long, long time. That kind of an emphasis, that kind of a coordination, is not as common in other parts of the country, and that's what the President's talking about.
Mm-hmm. Dick in Bark River, Michigan. Hi, Dick.
I'll try to keep this down to 40 seconds.
All right, Dick.
Assault weapons is a weasel word. It is only a macho imitation of a military, like, say, AK-47. All deer hunters with semiotic rifles, those are assault weapons also. That's it. It's just appearance. But my word will not, you know, it's set. And
all right, Ron.
I don't think that it is, well, I do believe that there is a great deal of recognition that the assault ban from 1994 to 2004, while it may have accomplished some things, was not really able to eliminate the high magazine capacity and some of the other things that can be done to modify otherwise unobjectionable or at least not as objectionable weapons. And as a result, it was somewhat disappointing that people are able to modify. And as the caller suggests, the difference between what we may call, a deer rifle for one purpose and then can be modified to be what somebody else would call an assault weapon. These are very difficult definitional problems. So as I said earlier, you know, legally, there may be all kinds of agreement that we don't want to have a certain kind of person get a certain kind of gun, but when you really get down to applying those standards in each community from each gun shop to the next, and when you get down to restricting what people do with the weapon when they take it out of the store and bring it back home, that gets much more difficult and much more challenging. We're going to get background checks. I think that's clear. But I don't know how much change we're going to see in the definition of weapons that are legal and illegal.
Thanks, Dick, very much for the call. Immigration reform. The President has a plan that has been somewhat leaked. The Republicans are saying this is not a good plan. This conversation started off as being a great effort in bipartisanship. Will it continue to be so?
The eight senators, four Republicans and four Democrats, who say they're willing to work toward a path toward citizenship. And I think ultimately this is the real sticking point, although there are other sticking points. How strong does the border have to be before we kick in the new process for moving people to legal status and then on to citizenship? How much guarantee do we have to have that there won't be future flow, as it's called, that in other words, we won't see another spike in people entering the country illegally as we did after the 1986 Immigration Act, which was also called reform and which was also a path to citizenship for millions of people. And those things are important, but ultimately the sticking point here is, are we talking about making 11 million people who are currently illegal legal eventually so they may stay here without hiding, or are we ultimately talking about making them citizens, the ones who were not born in this country, the people who were not brought here by their parents, but people who intentionally came to the country illegally? Are they going to eventually be able to not only have legal status but also be citizens and ultimately vote? That's really where the political rubber meets the road. At some juncture, that decision has to be made. And this group of eight, four Republicans, four Democrats, were willing to say that they were willing to move to a total path to citizenship, which would imply voting in the long run. That may be passable in the Senate. That may be acceptable in the Senate. Big question mark in the House of Representatives, where it appears that the majority of Republicans have drawn that line and said, we will not see these people made citizens. They came to the country illegally and intentionally, and they cannot be citizens.
Ron Elving, thank you ever so much. You really know your material, I must say. you know it all. You know things that everything. And you're a terrific guest. I thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you, Kathleen. You're very kind.
Ron Elving, our guest for All Things Political. It's a program we do each and every Monday at 9 o'clock, in case you're tuning us in, and I guess somebody might be out there listening for the very first time. We talk about all the issues in the news with terrific analysts of all kinds of political persuasions and invite you to call in with your calls about the big stories of the week. And Ron is a wonderful guest. We are a little short of our goal here, so we hope that you will call and contribute. This is one of my favorite hours of the week. I love political discussions, and we've just had some important and good ones over the years. I'm Kathleen Dunn with Lisa Nalbandian, and we are in our winter membership drive. When you think about how much you rely on our Ideas Network for enlightening, informative discussions, including some of the best discussions that you'll find on the radio about what's going on in the country, in the world, we rely on you to keep programs like the one you've been listening to on the air. And a gift of any amount will make a huge difference in our ability to pay for the programs that you count on. So we ask you, please make a gift right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Give at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. Help pay for the programs you depend on. We're looking for 28 more pledges in the next 8 minutes. Make your donation now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And I know so many of you enjoy the political discussions we have every Monday at 9 on All Things Political. Ron Elving, our guest, wonderful guest, senior Washington editor for NPR News. Take a few minutes to make this hour and many more of these conversations possible. Choose a gift amount that works for you, and then you just make your pledge. WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Supporting Wisconsin Public Radio right now is a great thing to do with 2 minutes, just 2 minutes of your time. Give us your name, contact information, how much you'd like to give, and how you'd like to pay. Whether you call or pledge online, we keep your personal information safe. We don't share it with any other organization.
And you must know that your gift supports the stories and the programs that keep you connected to the whole world. Please give now, WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
We pay for the things that are important to us. So think about what you spend your money on. And then think about Wisconsin Public Radio. So when you think about it, WPR is really important, too.
And when you think about it, life just wouldn't be as good without it, because WPR is important to you. Invest in it. Support the programs you enjoy, the programs you rely on every day. WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Maybe you're interested in playing a larger role in support of WPR. The 9XM Leadership Circle is a group of listeners who contribute $1,200 or more a year to support WPR programs. Leadership Circle members value the compelling public radio programming that so many in our community rely on. They want to make sure we'll be here today, tomorrow, for all who listen. If you'd like to increase your support to WPR and join the 9XM Leadership Circle, go to WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
I'm Dan Stein, President and CEO of Second Harvest Food Bank of Southern Wisconsin. Most of the people we serve don't need three meals a day. They need something to assist them to get over a hurdle at the end of the month when money runs tight. People are really surprised to learn that more than half the people we serve actually have someone in their household with a full-time job. The person that's hungry isn't somebody else that resides someplace else, but it is neighbors, it is family, it is friends. In southern Wisconsin, 43% are children. They're people that really don't have much they can do about their situation. Food for 40 has provided over 200,000 meals that throughout the state we're able to meet some of the needs of people who struggle with hunger. I think people in communities understand that there's a problem within their community, but I don't think a lot of people have an idea of the magnitude of the problems. We're very grateful that people throughout the state are supporting Food for 40 by supporting Wisconsin Public Radio and help the people in their neighborhoods, their family, friends, whomever it may be that are struggling with hunger. It's a perfect example of an easy way to make a difference for the people that we serve.
And making a difference is a pretty important thing to do in life. That Food for 40 program, I think it's great. Lisa, if you pledge, how much?
$120. A portion of your donation, instead of getting like a book or DVD, will go to Food for 40, and that feeds 40 families, 40 meals.
That's wonderful. So you're helping to feed people food, and we're feeding your mind, and it's all good. We're looking to get 26 pledges in the next. We just have a few minutes left, so if we can ask you to do this right now, it would be great. Our number is 888-202-2552 or go to WPR.org. 26 pledges in the next couple minutes and we'll be on track here, Lisa.
That's really great. Whatever the amount, we'll use it to support our programs, keeping your source of information and entertainment going strong. So give now, whatever the amount is comfortable for you, at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
A lot of you are like Sharon from Port Washington, who says, like so many others, I prefer to start every day tuning to WPR. Thanks, Lisa, very much. Thanks, everybody, for all of your pledges. We have another important hour coming up. Stay with us.